Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Assemblyman James Oskison of Pahrump, plus on the Power Pundit panel, Trey Abney and Ernie Adler. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are pleased to welcome to the program Assemblyman James Oskison. He represents District 36, based in Pahrump. Pleasure to have you on the program, sir.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's talk about Yucca Mountain to start out with.
Okay.
Since President Trump has been in office, there's been a lot of talk about restarting, exploring the idea of Yucca Mountain. I know there's a lot of folks in Nye County that would be very excited to have Yucca Mountain restarted. What's your thoughts?
I think the economic engine that Yucca Mountain generated for Nye County especially and some of the other rural counties surrounding it certainly was a great resource for those communities. I think, again, the thing I've always said is a safety needs to be proven. I've always asked for that in from the time that I actually started in the assembly. That's all we've ever asked for, and we're still waiting for those reports to come through.
Do you think that this is more realistic now, or do you think that the likelihood is that other parts of the country would want to have this nuclear storage facility because things have changed over time?
I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out with the federal government, which is really the driver, the engine driving this. We've got state officials that are opposed to it. And again, I have said on multiple occasions, I just want to see the safety and make sure that it's going to be prove out to be safe for not only now, but generations ahead.
You know, it's interesting, too, that people don't realize because it's been a long time, but UNLV also made a lot of money from the nuclear research.
There was a lot of research going on, a lot of things that happened, especially in Nye County. There was a lot of resources put into emergency services and those kinds of things that really have really bolstered up what those communities, those rural communities had. So certainly the economic component is important, but the safety component is much more important to me.
Let's talk about the hospital in Tonopah. Where are we with that at this point in time?
You know, the hospital in Tonopah, I know that there have been some people who have stepped up and made some significant improvements in what's going on for the quality of the health care in that community. The telehealth legislation that we were able to pass last session really has made that a more of a reality than it ever has been, being able to bill for those services and utilize those services. And I think the fact that we've got increasing numbers of broadband and width going through there is going to help tremendously in how they're going to be able to access their health care there.
And is Renown still providing services?
It's my understanding Renown is still providing services in Tonopah, and Commissioner Wickman there is very active in pursuing that and making sure the folks up there that she represents certainly have access to health care.
Your AB 210 would allow for creation of community education advisory boards, which would be selected by a city or county commissioners to provide input and advice to the local school board. It could be made up of parents, principals, students, city workers, all sorts of folks. How do you see this improving education?
I think anytime there's transparency and input into the education process, and those are the folks who are on the boots on the ground making these things happen, I think it makes a true difference in how children are educated. This really came, the genesis of this is really from Moapa Valley that I represent. There are CEBs there. There were some problems. The school district and one of the trustees decided that the CEBs really, I felt like they weren't valuable. I was in a meeting where they were just kind of discredited. This is an opportunity for the entire state, and this is a may, not a shall. Those districts that want to take advantage of it, schools that want to take advantage of it, I think it's a tremendous opportunity for parents and students and teachers alike to come together and have input into the educational process.
Do you look at Washoe County and what they're doing in terms of having an advisory board for the school district as a model for that?
No, I look at the CEBs that currently exist in Clark County and some of the rural areas in Clark County as the model for this, really. That's the genesis of where it came from.
And when you look at the Clark County School District and what it's going through, how would this affect this? Because it seems to be, that's a giant mess as it's moving forward.
Certainly has its challenges, I believe.
To put it mildly.
Yeah, to put it mildly. There are, I think there's folks working on this on a daily basis, and I truly believe that this would be an asset, an addendum to what's already happening, help these groups and these few people that they've picked to help monitor and run these schools. This would be an additional resource for them to be able to utilize.
You're not concerned that at some point it might be too many cooks?
At this point, I'm not. And again, it's a may, not a shall. And if they feel like they need that input, this is a great way to have that input into the system.
Democrats only need one Republican in the Assembly to go to their side for a 2/3 majority in which they can pass tax bills and override a gubernatorial veto. How firm or divided is the Assembly GOP, and what are your concerns that Democrats will gain that power with just a little help from one Republican?
I believe that this caucus is together more than it's ever been. I believe we have a true understanding of what our responsibility is to our constituents and those who elected us. And I believe that the caucus will stand together.
You were the chair of the Interim Legislative Committee on Healthcare.
I was.
Nevada's mental health system, has taken a lot of criticism, especially from the one-way busing of mental health patients out of Las Vegas a few years ago. What are the most important mental health bills that you expect this session? And that's a big deal.
It is. It's a huge deal. And fortunately, that is not something that they're doing anymore. That's been resolved through, I think, the court system. But I believe that access to mental health care is what's critical. The ability to streamline the process so people aren't held unnecessarily against their will through the L2K program. And there's access to mental health professionals that can provide them services on a more immediate basis than they are now. I think we get into crisis and we need to resolve those crisis issues before they get to crisis. And I think that Reno's done some great things with their mental health response teams. I'd like to see those models work throughout the state. But again, I think opening up some of these beds for folks that the private hospitals have done since they've upped the reimbursement, I think has been a great thing. It's taken a tremendous amount of pressure off the state system and allowed private entities to come in and really make a difference, I think, in the mental health system. Still have a long, long way to go.
Do you have concerns with the governor cutting the budget for mental health because rightly so, he says that Medicaid is taking over a lot of this mental health or patient needs. But if something happens with Obamacare, which is likely within the biennium, maybe not this first year, but certainly by the second year, do you have concerns that there doesn't appear to be a backup plan?
Sam, I think we have to go on what we have now, not anticipate what's going to happen. I think while everybody is concerned and worried about how things are working, I think we have a budget right now that we have to work with. And as those things come forward and move forward, hopefully sooner than later, we'll be able to plan for those. But I believe that we're doing the right thing and moving forward with the process we have today.
But doesn't that concern you? Because it's, we have a rainy day fund for things that go wrong. This could be huge. I mean, potentially billions.
concern? Yes, I think there's a concern. There's always going to be a concern, especially with the transition of the administrations and what's going to happen. We know, we believe, with the Affordable Care Act. But again, I think we have to work with the funds and the resources we have today. And we'll have to see what happens and move forward. I don't think anybody can predict what's going to happen. I mean, we can't, even Washington is not predicting what's going to happen. So it's pretty hard for us to budget for that.
All right, let's take a break. More with James Hoskinson when we come back.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance, custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Assemblyman James Oskerson. He represents District 36. You've sponsored AB 108, which calls for a periodic review of Medicaid reimbursement rates every 4 years. Can you explain the necessity of this bill?
Absolutely. The reimbursement rates have not been reviewed for a significant period of time. There's nothing statutorily really to require that. One of the things we heard through the interim committee of health during this last interim session was simply the reimbursement rates have got to change. We're losing providers. We're not able to provide for the services for the people we have now. And reimbursement is a big part of that. Now, reimbursement goes to budget, ties to budget, ties to the other things that go on, waivers with Medicaid and Medicare, those kind of folks. So we have to make sure that the people, the providers, are being reimbursed appropriately to provide services for the communities that they live in. So this is working with Health and Human Services to make sure that we have a system and a process in place. It's my understanding there's over 200,000 codes that are reimbursable. And that's a big job to go to review those every year. So what this will do is every 4 years there'll be a complete review of those, and hopefully it'll be an incremental times, so that it won't all be at once. But 1 year they may review a certain amount of codes, and then next year they may review another certain amount of codes to make sure that the reimbursement is appropriate and fair to the providers who are providing these services to our citizens.
Even as we see UNLV's medical school coming online, do you have concerns that we are so far behind with the number of doctors that we need in the state, and it's going to get worse before it gets better?
I don't know that it's going to get worse, because it's pretty significant now.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, for example, just in Northern Nevada, you're looking at 50,000 new homes over the next 5 to 10 years. 50,000. So if you put in two people per home, just alone, that's 100,000 extra people in Northern Nevada. And you're seeing, close to $11, $12 billion worth of projects on the table on the Las Vegas Strip alone. This is going to be a huge increase in population.
Well, let's first talk about how great that growth is going to be for
Absolutely.
Our state.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to be amazing. And those who predicted gloom and doom after the last legislative session, I think that it's great that those things are happening for our state.
Right, but you still got to be realistic. I mean, I'm certainly the biggest cheerleader for economic growth in the state. But one also has to be realistic that there is going to be great pressure on all kinds of services. But medical seems to be one of the ones at the top of the list because we've been so far behind for so long.
Public safety, public service, and certainly medical resources or transportation are going to be taxed. There's no doubt about it. And that happens when growth occurs as rapidly as it probably is going to occur in these communities. We have to make sure that we do the very best we can to provide those resources, and I believe truly that the Health and Human Services groups are looking at that. I know that some of the private groups are looking at that, and with more graduate medical education slots that the governor has done, the medical school coming online, you know, that class will start next year without the school being built. So we're going to start pumping out physicians and incentivize them and nurses and other folks to stay in the state of Nevada and have a actually want them to be here and want them to know we want them to be here.
Last question here. Six Republican candidates for the Nevada Assembly who lost in the primary last year filed legal action in Clark County alleging possible malfunction of voting machines. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I was one of those that they filed against. It was unfortunate. I think it was sour grapes on their part. It was clearly we campaigned hard. We campaigned in areas that one of my opponents wasn't aware was as important as it was to the community and to the area, and we went on through the primary and to the general election to win by 20 points. So I think that it's important to note that you need to know your district, you need to know where you're campaigning, you need to know your constituents. We made a significant effort to do that. And continue to do that. Not only we don't just campaign during the campaign cycle. We represent people for the entire process and time that we're in the elected office. We represent.
And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are pleased to welcome a great Power Pundit panel. As always, Trey Abney is here, Director of Government Relations for the Chamber, and former State Senator Ernie Adler. Pleasure to have you both here.
Thank you.
Let's start out with minimum wage. I've got a funny feeling you both have differing views on this subject. Ernie, take it away.
Well, there are a number of minimum wage proposals on the table, and of course, organized labor supports them and wants to see them happen. They've seen no drop-off in the number of jobs in other areas of the country where they have raised the minimum wage. So there is going to be a push to come forward with a higher minimum wage.
Which one do you favor? Do you favor the 15 or the 12 over time?
I think incrementally we might want to look at the 12 first. So I think... Well, over a period of time, perhaps 15, but I'd say right now I would favor the 12.
I think you would disagree.
Yeah, it's very timely. We just had a hearing on the $12 proposal yesterday, Senator Ford's proposal. The chamber doesn't support either, and I'll tell you why. It's the one size fits all approach that's really difficult. Yeah, it's, you know, for the big guys and some of the franchise guys. You know, first of all, most employers aren't paying minimum wage anyway. They're paying above that, about 2% of employees in the state. make the current minimum wage, and they're not on it very long. You know,
published reports say about 20,000 people.
Yeah, give or take. And the other thing is they're not on it very long. I think sometimes you hear a testimony like people are on minimum wage for 40 years, raising families of six, and you know, you hear all this stuff, and it's just not the case. And you know, to Ernie's point, there is evidence in Seattle that after they raised their wage to whatever it is now, that there were like something like 11,000 jobs that were lost. And so we really come at it from a small business perspective. That money has to come from somewhere when you do something like this. Small business owners don't have a pot of gold in their back room that when the government passes a new cost mandate, they just miserly take out a little bit more money to pay for it. That money has to come from somewhere. So it's going to come either in increased prices, it's going to come from not being able to hire as many people or to be able to pay them as well. And the other problem we have in the state, most states have what's called a tip credit. Your tipped employees get paid a lesser wage because of all the money they make in tips. I talked to a restaurant owner in Reno, and his tipped employees average about $25 an hour. Meanwhile, he's paying his cooks and his dishwashers about $10 an hour. And so the minimum wage, let's say it increases, those tipped employees will get that much more money. He may not be able to afford to pay the cooks anymore. So it's a vastly unfair system. And then the other thing is we're one of only four states that have a daily overtime rule where certain employees get overtime after 8 hours in a day, and that's costly as well. So I think the chamber, if we want anything done on the minimum wage, we think there needs to be some other things done on the other side of the ledger to help employers weather that.
Ernie, your side.
Well, I think that it has proven to work well in other states in raising the minimum wage. I think that $7.25 is just way too low, and we need to modernize our minimum wage system with a higher minimum wage.
You know, one of the things, Trey, I have to say, and I've certainly had people talking to me about this, which is even though you say that the majority of people making minimum wage are not, you know, family leaders with, you know, six kids, there are some people who are working in fast food industry, other service industries, that are trying to raise families and survive on this kind of money. And even having two jobs is still not going to get them to a living wage.
There are some families that do that. Remember, even McDonald's isn't paying minimum wage. So you're talking about very few people. But the other thing is that I pointed out before, they're not making it forever. They make minimum wage for a bit, and then they move up and move on. The minimum wage was never meant to be a living wage. It's meant to be a training wage to train you how to do basic job skills. And so by raising it, you're actually pricing out the young folks and young adults and first-time workers out of the market by doing this. And so, I mean, you can't create jobs by making it more expensive to create those jobs. You can't have workforce development if you're going to cut out and cut the legs out from underneath the workers starting in the workforce.
Ernie, on the other hand, you know, with the growth that we were talking about in the earliest segments with Assemblyman Oscarson, companies are not going to be able to get away with paying minimum wage because they're not going to get employees.
Well, I would agree with that, but we have a minimum wage that if you were paid that and trying to live, you would also qualify for food stamps and other governmental subsidies, and I don't think that the taxpayers should be funding services for people just because they're making such a low salary. I agree, though, that with the increase in employment in Northern Nevada, the wage rate is going to go up naturally, but I think there does need to be a higher bottom.
Okay, so Trey addressed that because that is accurate, that there are people that are making minimum wage, they're qualifying for government subsidies, which in the end is the taxpayers paying that money.
Well, I've heard this argument. I actually read a little blurb from some Brookings study the other day that says that actually they're not being subsidized because with the generous welfare benefits that we give out, it's actually keeping those people out of the job market, which means that the wages at the bottom are actually being pushed up. So it's actually having the opposite effect. It's because of those benefit programs, those people aren't looking for work, and so they're not in the job market to begin with. And so the rest of the people, that means the labor pool is smaller, which means that wage at the bottom has to go up to make up for that.
Yeah, but
interesting theory. I've never heard that before, just saying there's another side to that argument.
All right, but the bottom line is that there are people that are getting subsidies because the wages that they're earning are so low.
Maybe, but again, it looks like they're being priced out of the market anyway.
Where do you think this is going to end, Trey?
I don't know. I mean, the governor made a very strong statement about a week ago or a week or two ago about not being in favor of minimum wage increase. As you know, it takes 2/3 to override a veto, so it's going to be difficult.
And that's where we have to leave it. Gentlemen, great discussion. Thank you both very much.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
On our next broadcast, former State Senator Warren Hardy plus Dylan Sullivan, senior scientist for the Natural Resources Defense Council. We'll see you then.